Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
As Pete Carroll would say, we're pumped and jacked today. Definitely pumped and jacked. I don't know if we're, you know, rooting for the Seattle Seahawks or anything, but we're definitely pumped and jacked for the show. We welcome Inside Patriots Playbook for a Thursday, bye week before the playoffs began for the New England Patriots. Eric Scalavino from PFW is here. Can I say happy birthday, Eric?
You can, and can I tell you who I share a birthday with?
Who do you share a birthday with? Lou Holtz?
Lou Holtz, who's on the television right now.
Today's his birthday, too.
It's a happy birthday for everybody around here.
You need a little bit more
little
of a
bit,
lisp.
A little bit more of a lisp.
Yeah, there you
go. Games are about traditions.
It's all about tradition. Happy birthday.
There you go. Now that's the
How's
one.
That?
That's
How's that?
Good. I like it. Bravo. Bravo.
That's like a funny way to start the show.
One of his favorite lines, my favorite lines of his ever was when he was on College Football Final. And I don't remember what the context was, but he said, you know, it's girls under 12 and over 70 that love me. The ones in between that give me problems.
The ones that I get
so wrong.
I know.
It's just, yeah, you're right. There's just something not quite right about that.
All right, fair enough.
Well, good. And you don't look near as old as he is.
I hope not.
No,
thank you.
No, you're very spry looking 27 or 28.
Or higher.
No,
but
well,
thanks.
There you go. All right, what are you going to
do? I'm 38. I'm 38.
You're 38?
I'm 38.
Okay. All right, I was going to guess mid-30s. We talked about, well,
I feel younger, though.
Yeah,
John.
When you talked about playing at BU in the 1990s, I figured, well, you had to be somewhere in the vicinity. What are you going to do for your birthday? What are you going to do?
I'm here all day, man.
Nothing tonight?
Not really.
Come on.
I don't typically make a big deal of it.
Yeah, you know, I kind of, after I hit, after I had a surprise party for my 40th, that was the last significant birthday day, I think, that I spent.
That was only 2 years ago, though, right?
Absolutely. God love you. God love you.
I tell you what, though, John. Honestly, I feel younger and healthier as I've gotten older.
Yeah, you know what? I feel pretty good, too, for an old codger. I really do. Absolutely. My health is good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got my hair. Sorry about
that.
Sorry about that, Rick.
We all have our crosses to bear.
We all have our crosses to bear. Boy, isn't that the truth.
Carrying my cross on my head, apparently.
Yeah, I don't move quite as fast as I think as I once did. But other than that, I'm in pretty good shape. You know, I have no complaints.
You work out?
The weight is down just a little bit. I mean, you know, not a lot. Mostly it's during the springtime, you know, because I've, you know, coached baseball for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But since it looks like that's now winding down because the kid's getting older and I can't catch his fastball anymore because it takes my hand off.
Really?
And I even got a special mitt. Still can't catch it.
Really?
Oh, my God.
What does he throw?
You know, he only throws, you know, 70 to 80. But I mean, it hurts me, you know, and I've got the padded glove. And I'm like, I can't catch you anymore, man.
Wow.
Now, let the kids do that, you know, who can take that. I can't take that.
Wow.
Besides, you know, when I'm sitting, first of all, I can't squat anymore because the knees are just gone. So mm-hmm. I sit on the barrel that holds all the practice balls.
That's exactly what my dad would do for me when I was little. He'd get a milk crate or a bucket from working in the yard.
Yeah, bucket from working in the yard.
With a catcher's mitt and just sit there.
Right, and sit there behind on plate.
And it's still the perfect height.
But if you're not careful, if the ball glances off the bottom of your glove and you're not wearing Cup City.
Yeah, you better be wearing something.
Ding!
Oh, yeah.
Why would you ever be a catcher and not have that protection?
It's stupidity. Pure stupidity. And it scares me, especially when he throws like a changeup.
Mm-hmm.
Or he throws a curveball,
right?
And I don't know where
you misjudge it,
and I don't misjudge. Oh yeah. God, I'm like, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. So because of that, this is the year that I go back to the gym.
The year that you go back?
Yeah, I had a health club membership, you know, years before I was married.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then after you get married, and you know, it was one of those things that just went by the wayside. It's coming back now. So this year, 2011, that was one of my my resolutions that I never keep, but I'm keeping this one as I'm going to start, you know, going back and working out. And I don't need to, you know, bulk up or anything. I'm going to try to maintain where I am. right?
You trying to lose anything?
Yeah, I'd always like to lose. I'd like to lose, you know, an inch around the waist. Be a little bit
a
more
belt,
comfortable.
A belt loop?
A belt loop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to lose an inch around the waist just to be more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not horrible as it is now, if I do say so myself. Because I have to, you know, market myself a little bit now. But,
yeah.
You know, take Paul with you to the gym.
I have not reached Perillo status yet. No.
Oh, no. Paul looks much older than you.
I love the big fella. You want to see him around, you know? You don't want him to just drop dead of a heart attack if he gets in a heated argument with Fred.
Could happen at any time.
I know.
See, you know, it's... I just keep a lookout and just say, there before the grace of God go I, you know? So I'm like, okay, I'm good. You know, no matter how bad you got it, somebody else has always got it worse. So I'm like, okay, I'm grateful for what I have. We are pumped and jacked about being stacked and loaded today. How's that for a show? Coming up in just 5 minutes, John Clayton, one and only professor from ESPN, ESPN.com. He's going to join us here in the playbook, and we'll run over the weekend's games. We'll get his thoughts on MVP. We'll get his thoughts on the Patriots, and we'll do all of that good stuff. Hour number two of the program, obviously in addition to, I was just going to say Buster Crab. Damn Fred. You know, Russell Baxter, Don Banks from Sports Illustrated will be with us in hour number two. There is no definitive question of the day today. You know, I normally do that, and I especially wanted to do that during the course of this week because when you have pretty much a week off and you're still looking at, you know, what the options are, I always like to just try to get some of the stuff, you know, brought out a little bit. But at the same time, I had a hard time coming up with one today that hasn't been done yet.
How about who would you like to see win the AFC games this weekend? Because that'll determine who the Patriots play next week.
All right, so let's pick the AFC games this week?
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. That's a good one. I'll buy that one. I'll definitely buy that one. Who are the two winners in the AFC wildcard games this week?
And I know some people will probably say, I'd like to see so-and-so win, but I think the other one's going to.
That's exactly, you know what I mean? We want. That's exactly what we
give us your whole
AFC
picture.
Playoff
the AFC
picture. Ace Ticket Hotline is 508-543-7482. Email address, of course, as you know, webradio@patriots.com. Hit us up on the Facebook page as well. On our Ace Ticket Hotline is the one and only Professor John Clayton. John, it's great to speak with you again. How are you, my friend?
John, it's always good to talk to you.
Thank
Eric,
you,
how
sir.
You doing?
Good. How are you, John?
Good.
So let's kind of point that one out at you a little bit. How about AFC games this weekend? Who are you liking, and do you feel like, you know, well, let's just put it this way. Who you think will win and who will win, are they two different things?
What I look at is that, you know, one thing that's interesting in the wild card round is that the road teams actually in the last, since 2004 have actually done better than the home teams in the wild card round, 13-11, which is a little surprising. And you go into this weekend pretty much figuring there's going to be a 50-50 split in each conference. I mean, I just think the Baltimore is going to go into Kansas City. It won't be a drilling, but I think that they can go in there. They're more experienced. They know how to win on the road. They match up better, all those different things. So I think Baltimore can take the victory. I find it hard to think that the Jets have gotten that much better that they could top the Colts at home, even though the Colts aren't as good as they were last year because of all the injuries, the problems that they have at the receiver tight end position, some of the issues that they have on defense. But also, too, I don't see the Jets in certain areas being as good as they were in the championship game. And so, consequently, I think that the Colts, and you know, probably a very close game that will go into the fourth quarter, can pull out. So it's one road win and one road loss.
One road win. I think that's actually about right. I think I would go that realm. Eric, are you kind of looking at it that way too?
Well, I'm actually going with both of the road teams.
Road teams.
Not because of the historical factor that John just pointed out, but just because I think in Baltimore's case, they're the slightly better team than Kansas City. I hate to pick Kansas City to lose at home, but I think in this case, Baltimore has the edge overall. I think it's going to be an ugly, low-scoring kind of game. But I just have a gut feeling about the other game that I think the Jets are going to pull it out. Just because I think they gained a little confidence from being in the AFC title game last year, getting a lead early, even though they didn't eventually blow it in Indianapolis. It's just a gut feeling. There's nothing empirical that I'm going to throw out there about it. I just have a feeling that they're going to win the game and we're going to end up hosting them here
week. That might have to be the word of the day, empirical.
Okay.
I like that. That works. You don't use empirical too much, do you, John?
No, not usually. I usually don't cover the Romans.
I like that. I'm favoring sort of the Ravens myself, but I think I'm kind of slightly going toward the Colts.
Yeah, because what I look at is that, all right, let's look at some of the differences of this Jets team. Now, they are more talented at the wide receiver position, but Mark Sanchez hasn't taken advantage of it. In fact, when you look at the fact that since week four, when they went to more three receiver sets with Santonio Holmes, their production actually dropped down. They don't, they throw the ball more, they get more completions, but it's clearly affected their running game, and also Sanchez's accuracy tends to go a little bit awry in some games, even with the three receiver sets. And I'm saying that even though this is probably the most talented group of pass catchers that Sanchez will ever have in his entire career as a Jet, because, you know, you got Braylon Edwards, who arguably can be a number one receiver when he catches the ball.
Right.
Santonio Holmes, who's got number one ability. Dustin Keller, who is a great pass-catching tight end. LaDainian Tomlinson, who's dangerous out of the backfield. And Jericho Cotchery, who's very good out of the slot. Yet the problem comes down, Mark Sanchez in year two is still more of a rollout quarterback, and that takes him into the quarter of the field area where he really can't take full advantage yet of the three-receiver set. And so it's kind of that collage where it just doesn't come together. I guess it's empirical.
Empirical.
Well
Ooh,
done.
Well
I
done.
Said.
I like
probably
it.
Probably doesn't fit.
I like it. Now, before we kind of look ahead to the potential divisional round, let's stay with the wild card round in the NFC, John. Let me get a couple of your thoughts on those games as well.
Well, overall, I think in the NFC, when you look over there, there's pretty much a 50-50 split. I mean, New Orleans comes in as such a better team than Seattle, and
right.
even though they don't have a running game, I think they're going to be able to pull this one out easily because Seattle still has injuries at the quarterback position. Matt Hasselbeck will end up starting. I have no doubt about that. But, even though they did well with Matt Hasselbeck down there, they're just not a team that can get touchdown drives, and you have to get touchdown drives going against New Orleans. In the other game, it's a toss-up. I mean, you look at Green Bay, you look at Philadelphia, and you can make an argument for both teams. You know, Green Bay already has gone into Philadelphia and won. The difference is they weren't planning for Mike Vick. But the problem was Michael Vick was so good going against a depleted Packer defensive line. Remember, they went into the opening game. They had three active defensive linemen. And what they did was a 2-4-5 scheme that was prepared to stop Kevin Cobb. It had no ability to stop Michael Vick because Michael was running around in the third quarter and all those guys were getting oxygen masks.
Right.
So in a lot of ways, I mean, it's a toss-up. I think Philly has the edge because they're at home, but that's the best game of the weekend.
I'm going to go with both of the road teams in the NFC. Obviously, I agree with you about the Saints, although, their lack of running game could end up hurting them on down the line. The Packers were my preseason pick for the Super Bowl. Eric knows this. Mm-hmm. I was a little nervous about it once all those injuries started cropping up midway point of the season. Looked kind of foolish, but kind of stuck with the Packers. They seem to be getting back into shape here. Certainly I think the Eagles should win, but I'm going to stick by the Packers and say the Packers will win.
I'm going to, and this is, John's right, this is the toughest and probably the best game of the weekend. And I'm going to go with the road team in this one, too. I'm going to take the Packers. I just don't like the way Philly has played to end out this season. And I know, Vic's banged up a little bit, but, the fact that they're at home, they've lost a couple of games at home towards the end of the season here.
See, that's why this is one is such a toss-up.
Yeah.
Where you can make the argument is what's one of the weakest, thinnest positions right now for the Philadelphia Eagles? Well, it's their cornerbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Dimitri Patterson is starting, and he's been pretty awful. Asante Samuels has been playing with a knee injury that's limited him.
Right.
And what do the Packers do? They spread the field with four and five wide receivers where the Eagles barely have two to cover. So from that standpoint, you can easily make the argument that the Packers, who've already gone in there and can win, or you can make the argument that for just pure skilled talent, the Eagles might be the most talented team in the conference. So that's why it's like I flip a coin on that one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, so at any rate, I've got three of the four road teams coming out. That sort of stays with the thought process that the road teams certainly seem to have more than their fair share of success in the wild card round. Maybe it just has something to do with the fact that these teams are just they're even. It seems like usually the 5 and 6 seeds are teams that largely are, well, you certainly can argue, I think, in the AFC this year, the 5 and 6s are better than the 3 and 4. We can make that argument, don't you think?
I think what you're seeing is where the trend is, and this goes back, remember in 2002 they went to four divisions. All right, well, what happens now is that, as we can certainly see in the NFC West and even the AFC West, sometimes you have bad division races. And so because now you have more divisions, what you then have is the ability to, a second-place team can clearly be better. than the other team that wins a division. Now, that doesn't mean they should recede. Receding, I think, would be a disastrous idea, but that's just the way things are. Like, for example, you look at the NFC West, you know, the top three teams in the NFC South were all given victories from the NFC West, which bloated their records, and that's something that's a little bit of an anomaly. But, you know, the Saints, you have to say, are one of the top teams in the NFC just because they went to the Super Bowl last year. They haven't taken many hits in free agency, and they're still very good.
Sure, and I'd certainly go along with that. John, just as an aside here, though, why do you feel like reseeding, if it ever happened, would be a bad idea?
Well, because all you're doing is trying to adjust the statistical anomalies in certain years. And when you realize that an 8-8 division winner is only happening once every 10 to 15 years, you don't make adjustments because of that. It's like, for example, the rule change this year on the two possession. They went to the two possession just because there was anomalies the last couple of years. Well, this year there's 19 overtime games, third most since 2003, and only two were decided off the kickoff and the coin toss. So where you have that, it doesn't happen every year. And where the problem comes down, then you devalue the division winner. And let's say, for example, all right, let's say that next year that Jim Harbaugh takes over the Dolphins and they actually get better. And that, well, Buffalo's still going to stink, so that's not going to change. So all of a sudden now you have three teams banging at each other in the AFC East, and the best anybody's going to do is 3-3 in the division, or even the best 4-2. Then you have a division like the NFC South that gets all the advantages of a bad NFC West. So then you have a Patriot team that now wins a division with a 10-5 record, where let's say that you got some 12-win teams coming out of the other divisions that's pumped up by four wins against the NFC West.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you now have a good Patriot team having to lose a home game because of an easy schedule.
Okay.
Wrong.
Okay. I guess I could follow that. Is there a way out of this, or should we just keep it the way it is?
Keep it the way it is. I mean, what you might do is put some caveat in there that if you can't have a winning record, then you move back. What you don't want to do is penalize a 10-win division winner and give some team like a Tampa Bay that had an easy schedule. Better, good young team, but give them a home game at the expense of a very good division winner. So I think what you can do is put the provision in there, a losing division team, then voids its home opportunities. That, I think, would be fair, but I think if you do it any other way, it would be wrong.
I agree with that one. I think if you can't finish 500 in your division or 500 overall, then you probably shouldn't. You don't deserve the chance to win a home game.
Do you think there'll be a discussion, though, at some point this offseason about the possibility of just looking at reseeding or addressing the playoff format?
Well, Rich McKay is a co-chairman of the competition committee, and he's got 18 votes. He's put it up two times, and the most he's had is 18 votes. And so now, with Seattle being 7-9, that would give you the chance that they might get a few more votes. And so I just hope it doesn't happen, because sometimes, and I think we're seeing it more and more in the NFL, they're overreacting to things. And when you overreact, just because one of the problems is you have statistical anomalies, because there are only 16, 18 games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's 16 games now, there'll be 18 games in the future. That's not a big model. And so when one thing goes a little bit awry, then it throws everything off. And so I think that would be the wrong thing to do.
John, you just briefly mentioned as well about the fact that certainly the overtime rules will change here in the playoffs. Which of the four games this weekend is most likely, in your estimation, to get there to overtime and test the new rule?
Probably Philly-Green Bay, just because both teams have fourth-quarter comeback ability, and I went to the Green Bay game last year against Arizona that went into overtime, so I can easily see that happening, because you can see that if Vic is down 17 points, he can come back. If Aaron Rodgers is down 10 points, he can come back. Both have good field goal kickers, some of the best in football, so I can see that game as being one that can go overtime. You know, maybe to a certain degree, the Colts and the Jets, just because, you know, the Colts do give up points, and Peyton Manning has an amazing ability to drive his team back. I don't see Baltimore and Kansas City going overtime, and, you know, they'll be probably singing the lights are out in the Seahawks game by the third quarter.
ESPN.com's John Clayton with us here inside Patriots Playbook. Let's go with let's take just a brief. I don't really like to look ahead at this stage of the game. We sort of aspire to the thought process down the hallway here, John, over trying to take it one game at a time. But based on what you think will happen in the wild card games, that would put Baltimore here in Foxborough, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Baltimore, is that the toughest matchup, or is that the best matchup for the Patriots?
I'd say that's the toughest matchup. I'd say the Colts would be the second toughest matchup, and it's not because the Colts. I mean, because one thing you know is that Brady can pretty well shred a cover two, but also just the history with these two quarterbacks going against each other, and the fact that they've played each other again this year, and you've seen how close it was. You know, Manning's one drive away from doing something as far as taking it at overtime or putting it at, with a victory. You know, there's just so much history between these two teams. Where Baltimore's dangerous is that they can do some of those Cleveland looks where they can have 11 guys standing up. You don't give a pre-snap read to Tom Brady. They can put the pressure on the quarterback, and you saw that the first game went overtime. So I think that that's probably the toughest matchup. And then you go back. Well, let's put it this way. There's not going to be the flat performance that was there last year in the playoffs. I mean, this is so much of a better team than that and so much younger and more vital. So you won't see a repeat of that. But I'd say Baltimore would probably give the toughest matchup.
Will you be surprised if this Patriots team does not – A, reach the Super Bowl, and B, win the Super Bowl?
I would, yeah. I'd be surprised because I think everything's set up for them right now. They're getting health. To a degree, they're getting healthier. I mean, they still have some issues on the defensive line. But I just think that you know, Tom Brady at home is almost unbeatable. I mean, you have to have almost the perfect game, the perfect game plan, or the great break to be able to win that game. And breaks usually don't happen on the road. They usually happen to the home team. So I think that gets them into the Super Bowl. And depending on the dynamics of how much it costs as far as injuries, you know, you'd have to think they're going to be a solid favorite, whether it's going to be Atlanta, Philadelphia, Green Bay, or New Orleans, you know, any of those four teams. And so right now it's pretty well set up to get into the Super Bowl, and depending on the injury situation, probably win the Super Bowl.
Is Brady your MVP?
Yes, no question. I mean, it was questions, you know, mid-season it was Peyton. Then all of a sudden, you know, Tom Brady goes almost like 15 seasons without throwing an interception. You know, adjusting in the middle of the season to a completely new offense and making it better, getting big plays out of two tight end sets, incredible. So, you know, everybody was kind of jumping on the Michael Vick bandwagon. My rationale is, okay, what I'll do is I'll give Michael Vick the offensive player, but I don't think anybody can not give it to Tom Brady as the most valuable player. I mean, it should almost be unanimous, but nothing ever is, but my vote would go to Tom Brady.
How about Belichick for Coach of the Year?
I'm not going to do that. Actually, I'm going to go a little bit of a different way because, you know, as close as he should be for being rewarded for what's a great season, and he arguably should be in the top three, and this is one where you can spread it out. I mean, the easy thing to do is give it to Todd Haley for taking a four-win team and taking it up to 10 and getting into the playoffs. Still think that's a byproduct of the easy schedule because they had the easiest schedule, which that's not a penalty, but also to the additions of the two assistant coaches, Romeo Crennel and Charlie Weiss. Mm-hmm. You can give it to Raheem Morris. I'm probably leaning toward Andy Reid because I considered the Randy Moss decision one of the three boldest decisions, and that turned out to be great. Andy Reid traded a franchise quarterback in Donovan McNabb, developed Michael Vick, and won the division. To me, I'm probably going to be the only person voting for him, but that topped anything because he made the boldest move and made it work, along with getting exceptional value for Donovan McNabb and potentially Kevin Cobb.
Two huge stories today, John, in terms of coaching news around the NFL. Number one, the Cowboys are making it official that Jason Garrett is going to be the head coach. You're not surprised at all that he's getting the shot, are you?
No, because I think when you saw Sunday that that was going to happen, that told me two things, that they weren't getting Jim Harbaugh, they weren't going to pay the price for that, and that they weren't getting Jeff Fisher because they figured Jeff wasn't coming out. So those two things came out of Sunday, and so then it was just a matter of going through the process of the Rooney Rule interviews that you knew that was going to happen. No surprise there. The Harbaugh thing, I could see that shaping up on Monday because 20,000 empty seats in the final two home games of a 1-7 home team tells me that Tony Sperano was not going to come back. And when they weren't going to fire Jeff Ireland, which I wouldn't say they should, that killed Bill Cowher as a candidate. So it came down to two big names, John Gruden and Jim Harbaugh. And so then they had to get Jim Harbaugh. That's why if it's $7.7 million or it's $8 million, they had to pay the price to get Jim Harbaugh because they're in a Miami Heat town and they're losing sponsorships and fans to the Heat.
That's Belichick money, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah, in fact,
is he worth it? Is Jim Harbaugh worth it?
I don't know. I mean, let's put it this way. He's worth it to the Dolphins because what happens to those 20,000 people that weren't going to buy back Tony Sperano? And if you don't bring in you can't go with an assistant coach. I mean, he was an assistant coach, and then if you replace him with an assistant coach, fans aren't going to buy it. So Harbaugh comes in with great schemes, great coaching ability, an ability to take quarterbacks and make them good things. I mean, I think he can get more out of Chad Henne as a former Michigan quarterback using a Michigan quarterback than Dan Henning did. I mean, Dan Henning this year, unfortunately, Chad got worse, not better. And so I think he can do some good things, but regardless, he was a name, and they had to come up with a name.
What happened with Harbaugh and the 49ers?
I know $4.5 million. Let's put it this way: it's real simple.
Money.
$4.5 million in a taxable state of 10.3% versus $8 million in a non-tax state. You do the math.
Yeah, I'd still take 4.5, but that's okay. That's just me.
You pay the taxes. That's good.
Yeah, I would pay.
The governor would very much appreciate.
He would very much like that. That's very, very true. Also noticed an assistant coach that made some news this week is the Houston Texans hired Wade Phillips. I think that's a great move.
Well, because when you look at his last four moves as a defensive coordinator, he's done two things.
Mm-hmm.
He's taken a defense and knocked 3 points a game off it, and everywhere he's gone as a defensive coordinator, they've improved themselves by 3 wins. So you put those two combinations together for a quarterback who can throw for 45 to 4,700 yards, to the league's leading rusher, to a decent offensive line, and an offense that can score 24 points a game, 25 points a game. If he can shave it down to even 20 points a game, then all of a sudden they're a 9-win, 10-win team.
I just, to me, I'm wondering why that didn't happen a little bit sooner. I realized that, that Wade Phillips was going to get a chance to probably, hang himself a little bit. He obviously did that in Dallas, and then you probably had to wait until the season was over, certainly in order to hire themselves as a defensive coach. Does he have it still in his career to be a head coach?
I think that's probably over, because, it's very rare to get three chances, and he's now had three chances, and
mm-hmm.
so I think he can comfortably sit now as a defensive coordinator. I mean, he's going to make $2.1 million, the most of any defensive coordinator a year, but that's nice. It's not the money. He's just a good coach. And believe me, the day that he got fired, they reached out to him, the Houston Texans.
They
called him and they said, hey, be on guard here. If you want to come in as an interim coach or as a defensive coordinator now to help us out, think about it. It never got to the point where they did that, but the day that he was fired, the Texans called.
Interesting. Interesting. Hey, John, thank you again very much for the time. We know that your time is valuable, very busy this time of year, but it's always great to visit with you, and hope we get to see you in Foxborough over the next couple of games.
That'll be great. It's been an empirical experience for me.
We're going to be hearing that word on ESPN later.
It's going to be there. We want you to drop empirical.
There you go.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks, John. Hey, some college football NFL-related news. Andrew Luck not declaring for the draft this year. Going back to Stanford. A little bit of a surprise that Harbaugh's
leaving.
Goodbye,
Carolina. You know what? Yeah. Honestly, because I would have thought that Luck would have left if Harbaugh was leaving. It would have made the decision that much easier to do. But clearly, Andrew Luck is a college guy. He likes the college experience. There's nothing wrong with that. I wonder overall, especially with his head coach apparently headed for Miami, that's what it appears to be at this stage of the game, why, if he's already going to be the number one pick in the draft, why would he do it?
I don't know. Maybe
Carolina has said, we're making him number one. So he can only go one place, and that's down.
Well, not if the team that has the number one pick next year decides to do the same thing.
God forbid, what happens if the guy gets injured? Or he just has a terrible year? Or he's not surrounded with the kind of talent at Stanford that he was this year? I mean, new coach, new staff, I mean, coming in, I mean... there's just too many variables. This is the first time I have ever seen a move like this being made by an outstanding college player who was almost guaranteed to be the number one overall pick in the draft.
Whoa, Sam Bradford last year.
No. But Sam decided to go pro. What if he had stayed at Oklahoma? The same equivalent here, Eric, would have been if Bradford had stayed at Oklahoma and the head coach at Oklahoma had left. That would have been an equivocal move. Same move. Bob Stoops. That's exactly what Andrew Luck is doing now. It's exactly what he's doing now.
Maybe the fact that there's probably going to be a rookie wage scale had something to do with this, because he's not going to get the type of money that Bradford or...
So it's kind of like, well, I'm not going to get Bradford money, so what
so
the hell
let me just get my degree now.
Get my degree and move
finish
on.
Finish my college experience
enjoy
it while I'm young.
If that is the case, I will tell you that is an outstanding move on his part. I hope it sets a tremendous precedent. I really do. tells you something about Stanford pedigree, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, these guys are, you know, they're not dumb. These guys are, you know, this is MIT West, so to speak. This is the I always call the Stanford the Ivy League of the West, and that's probably not even doing them justice to, by saying that. Fact remains is that, you know, he's a smart kid. He's been around football his whole life. His father was obviously a great quarterback at University of West Virginia and was a pretty good quarterback in the NFL. He spent some time with the Houston Oilers, as I'm sure you'll remember. And his father is now the athletic director at West Virginia.
And so, I know that.
Yes, Oliver Luck is the AD at West Virginia. He's the one that just pulled the deal on the whole, Dana Holgorsen coach in waiting thing this year. Bill Stewart's got one more year to head coach. Mm-hmm. Holgorsen was hired from Oklahoma State to come in to be the offensive coordinator, and then he's the coach in waiting next year mm-hmm. as they force Stewart to retire. That was all orchestrated by Oliver Luck. So you talk about a guy that, you know, comes from a family that's just all football and nothing but football. For him to make this decision to stay at Stanford, especially with his head coach apparently leaving,
yeah.
I think is one of the upsets of the year. We've got a potential story of the year right here, and it's January 6th.
I think I'd be shocked if it doesn't have anything to do with the rookie wage, the purported rookie wage scale, because that's going to be part of the new CBA.
Right.
The commissioner, did you get the letter from the commissioner
last week? I saw it. Yeah, I didn't.
In it, he specifically mentions that as a priority, as something that's going to be part of the new deal, that, you know, draft picks are still going to get paid well, but they're not going to get the exorbitant salaries that they've been getting, and that money is going to be transferred to proven veterans, which I've been advocating for years, so I'm glad that that's going to happen. I would say that that's probably a contributing factor to Andrew Luck's decision.
Well, Has to be.
Because he's not going to be losing as much as he normally
Either that or the girls on the Stanford campus are just, you know, it's just he can't pass it up. You know, they're just all over him, and he's just like, why would I want to leave this?
Guessing he'd get a lot more if he had a lot of money.
Well, honesty is the best policy.
Just all I'm saying, Christina. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, girl.
That's Lindsay.
Oh, is that Lindsay?
That's three Wes.
Is it? Mm-hmm. Three? All right. Okay, good. It sounded like her. All right. Thank you, Lindsay. Honesty is the best policy. Might as well just, you know, get it from the start. So, those are the big NFL news stories today. Andrew Luck staying.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Jim Harbaugh looking like he's going to be joining us in the AFC East next year.
Pressing his luck should be the...
Pressing his luck.
Should be the headline in the Palo Alto Times or whatever their newspaper is.
I'm sure that that will, I'm sure that that will find its way onto a newspaper somewhere. All right, don't forget our question of the day is you've got to tell us who you think are winning the two AFC wild card games this week. Jets over the Colts, Colts over the Jets, Ravens over the Chiefs, or can the Chiefs win at home? Webradio at Patriots.com, Ace Ticket Hotline 508-543-7482. Facebook page is up and running. If you're not on Facebook, you can always submit the friend request to John Rook, R-O-O-K-E. Just write Patriots Playbook in the little note column there so we recognize you. We'll accept the friend request, and you are off and running, and you're chatting with us right here in the Playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.
Hey, girl.
So, Pat, how many advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's gotta be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian. You can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff may be. Learn more at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
You may know that Verizon Fios has more HD channels than cable, but what you may not know is that now you can sign up for Verizon Fios with no term contract required. And if you're not absolutely satisfied, you can cancel with no early termination fees. That's right. You can get Fios TV, internet, and phone at a guaranteed low price of just $89.99 a month for a year with no term contract required. And if you don't love it, you can cancel with no early termination fees. Just call 1-866-892-6057. That's 1-866-892-6057, and you'll know why now is the best time to switch to Fios. Get your game face on. Play the Gridiron Challenge at patriots.com/gridironchallenge and enter for your chance to win tickets and a chance to win the grand prize, an all-inclusive trip to the big game. Brought to you by Verizon. For official rules and terms, visit patriots.com/gridironchallenge. For new customers only. Equipment charges, taxes, and fees and other terms apply. Rate may increase after 1 year. Fios service is available in select areas. Offer expires 9/18/10. Call for more details.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this when you're ready.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed, go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open!
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
All right, the punt by Fields, chasing Edelman way back to his six. Heads to the right, down to the left at the 10, turning it wide, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45. He's at midfield, at the 40, the 30, the 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Julian Edelman. Woodhead takes the handoff to the left side, slithers to the right, first down at the 30, cuts inside the 25, on his feet at the 20, turning outside, 15, 10, 5, end zone, touchdown.
Oh, what a run.
36-yard touchdown run.
Yeah, baby. How about Julian Edelman, huh? Fantastic.
It all turned around for him after he talked to me last week.
Hey.
I talked to him one-on-one, did a little feature for Patriots.com, yeah, and he had a breakout performance. See, it was cathartic. All he had to do was talk about it.
And we hosted him in the post-game little press conference that we do for the season ticket holders up at the club level.
Was he still in his
he was still in
pads
his,
or the
he was
pants
still in
anyway.
His pants,
right.
And he was in his undershirt. And so, obviously, you know, the women were all going crazy. They loved the long hair.
Did they really?
Oh, yeah, they loved the long hair. And, of course, he gave the reason.
Well.
They gave the reason.
As well. Dicks as well.
It's the only Julian soundbite I have.
Unfortunately for him.
Yeah, really. I was about to say.
But I figured, John, I was like, you know, we have kind of the same old intro and outro and stuff. So I figured as we get into the exciting games this year and I get these radio calls dropped into my inbox,
might as well
mix them in to come in and out of the breaks with.
That's all good.
I like it.
Absolutely. I think we should be doing that more often. You know, we got to give a little flavor of what it's like out there in the field. A couple of interesting notes here. Number one, Lyndon sends this. He says, the Andrew Luck decision to go back to school, I believe this has been done before. Wasn't Matt Leinart projected as the number one pick and then he decided to go back to school for another year?
But again, in your scenario, his head coach wasn't leaving.
Yeah, his head coach didn't leave, though. I don't think that's ever, you know, the coach has left and the guy decided to stay. That's the scenario that I'm actually sort of underscoring here. It's a good point, Lyndon, and you're absolutely right about that. He did think about leaving.
Won the Heisman, and he thought about leaving.
But he came back for his last year,
and
Texas kicked his ass then.
Yeah.
Or Vince Young kicked
his ass.
Vince
Young did.
Come on! Gonna give me a little.
But I wanted USC to win that game.
Why?
Because I liked USC.
That was the best.
I thought they were the better team.
That will go down as one of the top college games of all time. You have to admit it.
It was a good game.
It was a good game.
Yeah.
It was one of the best of all time, Eric.
I don't like Vince Young either. I don't like his attitude. I don't like his on-field performance.
But you're thinking of what he is now. When you go back to that game in January of 2005, okay? I mean, we're talking something that was 6 years ago now. Mm-hmm. It seems like. you know, yesterday to me. But, you know, his performance that day was as phenomenal a big game performance as there ever will be.
Yeah, he overtook the game at the end there. He did.
They couldn't stop him.
I know.
They couldn't tackle
him. I know. I didn't like it. I wanted you. I was rooting for Pete Carroll.
Vince Young will come in and back up Tom Brady next year.
I don't know if I want that either.
I have probably about 2,000 people going, what?
What are you? No
are
way.
You nuts? No, that's not happening.
I don't know if he's going to be on the Titans next year, though.
No, he will not be on the Titans next year. No, they've already decided
he's somewhere
not
else.
Back. Yeah. They've already decided. Jeff Fisher won the battle.
Good move the owner there.
I'm not going to disagree, but I have to admit, I am shocked by that. I really thought that because Vince was Bud Adams' guy, that Jeff Fisher, his time was probably going to wear out first because he'd been there for 18 years.
Yep.
But now Bud Adams has decided, all right, you know what, let's move on. Vince, you're going to have to go elsewhere, even though Bud Adams says, that he hasn't decided definitively yet on the coaching staff for next year. It appears for now that Fisher has won that individual battle.
Shouldn't it be up to the head coach who the coaching staff is?
No. Bud Adams runs that franchise. Come on. You know that. Bud.
Yeah, but.
Bud is Jerry Jones a few years ago. He just does it in a little bit quieter mode. Plus, he's also now 88 years old.
Yeah, but
so he's just sort
if
of
I'm Jeff Fisher,
he's treated like the crazy uncle. Just get over in the corner, uncle, and leave
but
yourself.
But Jeff
alone.
Fisher allows him to decide who's going to be his assistant coaches? I find that hard to believe
I
from
think
a guy
what
like
he
Jeff Fisher.
I think probably what he infers by that is saying that he hasn't decided on Fisher's status 100% yet.
Well, that's one thing. But to say he hasn't decided on the staff, to me, implies that he's making the personnel decisions for the coaches.
That's the quote. Says staff, coaches.
I hope he just means the head coach.
You would think.
Because, I mean, especially a guy of Jeff Fisher's tenure. It's not like Jason Garrett, who's been elevated. And,
yeah, right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe you think he still needs a little coddling or a little more experience.
Right.
This guy's been at it for a long time, and he's proven that he's a winner.
Jay says Manning would have gone to Parcells' Jets in 97, but he decided to go back and become a Colt. All right, that's good. But again, I don't think he was his college coach at the time.
Phil Fulmer was still
he was still
at
Tennessee.
Yeah,
that's the only difference here. Because if Harbaugh is leaving, and for the quarterback not to leave with him, that's an upset. That's an upset of huge I'm thinking unprecedented proportions. It's never been done before, not to my knowledge. Here's another good one, another tidbit that Stripper sends us, all right?
Okay.
Most important news of the day. The world realized Eric shares a birthday with the greatest TV short order cook ever, Vic Tabak.
Vic Tabak from Alice.
On Alice.
Yeah.
Is that not great?
I didn't know that.
You and Mel?
I didn't know
share
Vic
the same
Tabak
birthday.
Was, really?
Mm-hmm.
The late Vic Tabak, right?
Yes, I believe he has passed on.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize he was one of my brethren on this day.
Yeah. How about that?
Oh, that's cool.
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
See? We should dig into this a little bit more. Have you ever done that?
I think I'm going to set myself up for this one. I think Joan of Arc also was born on this day. great martyr that she was.
Well, you're the Joan of Arc of PFW Progress.
Yeah, well, I am martyred every day on that show, that's for sure.
I think that's actually pretty
God
good.
God almighty.
They put you out on the stake. They burn you
they
alive.
They burn me alive all the time. Yep.
I like that,
appropriate.
Not bad. All right. I do say so myself, right? All right, Donald sends this. He says, I think the Jets lead for three quarters, and then Manning being Manning is going to lead them back. So I'm going to take the Colts. And I think the Chiefs run well, but the Ravens have a good run defense. They're going to stop the Chiefs, so I'm going to take the Ravens. And can you please tell me when Christian Fourier started to work for ESPN College? I think he means ESPNU. I saw him this weekend and was shocked. By the way, happy birthday, Eric.
Thank you.
Go Pats.
Appreciate it.
When did Christian Fourier start working for ESPNU?
Didn't know he was.
I didn't either. You saw him doing what? What Donald, what did you see him doing?
Oh, you know what? I take that back. I think I have seen him doing studio stuff.
Oh, really?
Although, you know what? It might have been on Versus that I saw him doing that. And
I had never seen him on ESPNU, ever.
Yeah, I know I've seen him on television outside of our in-house media. And I think it was Versus.
Okay.
But it may have been the U. I don't remember.
Michael sends his birthday wishes. He says, I'm a 37-year-old listener, soon to be 38.
Thanks, Michael.
So he's right there in your age bracket.
Cool.
That all works. All right, George. Hello, John and Eric. I'd love to see the Jets lose and the Ravens win. I would embarrass the Ravens and Terrell Suggs especially. He's such a dumb and loudmouthed individual, and he has a man crush on Brady. I want to see him on his knees begging for Brady to stop embarrassing his defense. You can bet on Belichick to come up with a scheme to make Suggs look especially silly on some plays. Hello, Anthony Smith from 07.
Yeah.
I'd love to kick the Ravens' arse. I don't really think you're going to get too many Patriot fans to disagree with that one.
Yeah.
You know, especially when it comes to a guy like Suggs. You know, like we were saying yesterday, honestly, you can get a great storyline out of any one of those three teams that
could
potentially come in, right?
Easily.
Donald says the Christian was on ESPN Saturday. Yeah. Okay.
All right, good for him.
Good for him. Hey, I always wondered why he wasn't. He's a, you know, relatively good-looking guy, as things like that go. He's very personal. He does a good job, I think, on the NFL Sunday show on the radio that he does on EEI. So I always wonder why he didn't get a little bit more of a media shot. Maybe he's doing that now.
Yeah.
Got an agent that's got to push him. Michael says, realistically, for the wild card games, the Ravens are the better team. I think they will go to Kansas City and win the game. Ravens have a strong defense, and they can control the Chiefs' run game. Flacco is good enough to win. As for the Jets and Colts, I would like to see the Jets win and be the team to come to England. However, I think Peyton, I like to call him Peyton, is solid and dangerous. The Colts are likely to win that game. As for the NFC, I think the Packers and Saints will win each game. Packers are dangerous. Remind me of the 07 Giants, the number 6 seed, and coming on late in the season. Even though the Saints are banged up in the run game, they are traveling to Seattle. So Seahawks just don't have enough weapons to beat Breeze. I'll certainly go along with that one.
I just realized, John, I picked all the road teams. And
you did.
I didn't realize that when I was – I didn't do that intentionally, but
– the only home team I have is the Colts. And that's just a grudging selection, as you know. I just, you know, kind of feeling like that's the deal. Mary Beth, happy birthday, Eric.
Thank you.
John, I see the Ravens and the Colts winning this weekend's games, although I, too, would like to see the Jets in Gillette again. I'm kind of right there with Mary Beth.
I don't know if I'd like to see them, but I just think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I just, okay, and that's fine.
It's just my gut feeling, that's all.
I wish it would. I think we'd all have the most fun, and I'm putting quotes around that word, I think we'd have the most fun if the Jets were back in town. That's just me. Just because, you know, now, you know, Buffoon is an easy target. Coach Buffoon is an easy target.
You just want to hold up
stinky
foot signs.
I want to hold up stinky feet. I want to see thousands of feet in the stands at Gillette. That would be hysterical. Come on. You got to admit. That's like one for the ages, you know? That would be, I mean, the highlight, that will live forever in infamy in the highlight reels. You know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
People are holding up, you know, stinky, hey, Rex, smell my feet, you know, that kind of.
God almighty. Grossing me out.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, it is going to happen. They're going to win.
Okay.
They're going to beat the Colts.
Yeah. Still thinking the Colts are going to win the game, though. But I'd like
so for then them. It's not going
to
happen.
No, I would like for them. It's, you know, wishful thinking. I'd like for that to happen. That's all. That's all I'm saying here. All right. Let me see what else I got here. John, I've been a big fan of Algie Crumpler for a long time. Was happy to see him sign on this year. I think that he has been an MVP as far as the running game has gone all season and as far as helping with the two rookie tight ends. I was rooting for him to catch a touchdown at home all season and was thrilled to see him finally get one last week. I listened but could not hear on TV whether you gave him a loud Algernon, as you and Eric had discussed earlier this season.
Oh, that's right,
I did.
John.
I
did you?
Yeah, but nobody heard it because everybody goes nuts.
Oh, I missed it.
I said Algernon Crumpler.
Because I can sometimes hear your first down calls.
Right, but
the
press
box.
But the crowd's going crazy.
Yeah.
You know, during a touchdown.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You know, I totally get.
Oh, man, I forgot about that.
Thank you, Jay, near Rochester.
Because he scored first in Buffalo.
Yes, yes.
That was his first touchdown.
And I did it I did it at home for my 16-year-old, for Austin. And he's like, is his name really Algernon?
Algernon. Oh, I didn't even think to listen for that.
I did.
Good.
Just nobody.
Good.
Nobody heard
good.
It. So you're just gonna have to believe me.
I do believe you.
But hey, I'm getting Jay. Remember, that's very impressive.
Yeah.
By the way, it's very impressive. Algernon Crumpler.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Bad Kevin. Here we go. Great show. I love John Clayton. Nice to hear him on the show. Well, you'll need to stick around for hour two.
Mm-hmm. We have Donnie Banks.
We have Don Banks coming up as well as Russell Baxter. To answer your question about the AFC wildcard games, I am the odd man out. This is not what I want to happen, but what I think will happen. All right, here he goes.
Yep.
Chiefs 24, Ravens 17.
Wow, okay.
I think the running game of the Chiefs will allow Castle to hit Bo at least once for a big play. I know Ed Reed is back there, but I see play action sucking him up once or twice. Also, the Chiefs' special teams will help with a huge field advantage shift or a touchdown. Then he also says,
about the other game,
Colts 28, Jets 14. I don't think this game is even this close. The Jets are in shambles. I'd love to play the Jets because that would all but guarantee us a spot in the AFC Championship. Jets defense is not playing well at all. Manning will have a day.
So the Chiefs would come to Foxborough.
Under his scenario.
In his scenario.
The Chiefs would come to Foxborough.
Interesting.
That is the first person all week I have talked to that thinks the Chiefs will win the game.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Bad Kevin.
I don't think it's a slam dunk for the Ravens. I just want to make that clear. I wouldn't be shocked if Kansas City won. I just think it's going to be the Ravens. I wouldn't be surprised.
I do, too. I think it's going to be the Ravens.
It's Arrowhead. It's a tough place to play.
Right. I think it will be the Ravens.
Although I was a little surprised that they got so handily beaten by the Raiders last week.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a little bit of a shocker.
Because they had something to play for. It's not like New England, who didn't have anything, and they still came out and ran all over the Dolphins.
Right. TGNNJ says, John, Luck doesn't want to be a Panther. He wants to win. Why would you want to be drafted by an organization that is not committed to winning? Well, you know, all right, that's a good question. And I think, frankly, sometimes winning is overrated a little bit. Guy has a chance to make, you know, millions. He can do the same as this year, next year, but he can't do better. He can only go lower. That's the whole point of saying that he can only go down in this instance. This is the first time in which this will have ever occurred, which is why I agree 110% with, you know, Mr. Scalavino over here, is that this has to have something to do with the, you know, impending rookie salary cap. Like, if it doesn't make any difference, then you know what? I'm sticking around. I'm getting my degree. I'm going to have fun in college for another year, which is not a bad thing, by the way.
No.
Okay?
No.
Not a bad thing.
Because you're only that young once.
Exactly. I mean, you're going to turn, you know, you're going to have to grow up eventually. And we tell this to the, you know, kids that I, you know, cover college basketball with all the time. I'm like, you know what? Play. As long as you can. Because you're going to have to get out in the real world at some point in time, and then you're not going to be able to play anymore. So whether or not, you know, you stay here, and we would hope that you would stay here, but, you know, keep playing ball. That means you can get a job to go play in Europe. If you don't make the league, great, go play in Europe. You know, because a lot of those European jobs, they pay six-figure salaries.
And see, and yeah, and get to see Europe, travel around Europe.
I can't think of a better thing for someone at age 23, 24 to be doing, where you could go live in France, or go live in England, or go live in Greece, or go live...
Learn another language,
learn another culture, make $120,000 a year, most of it, by the way.
They make much money out there?
Some of them can. You usually get an apartment paid for you. The money is tax-free. I mean, it's, you know, everything's paid for. Yes.
Well, they do a lot better than I thought.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
They do.
The European leagues,
yeah,
if you're playing D1, and that's obviously the first division of European leagues. So it's their upper crust pro leagues in Europe. If you're playing especially the Italian Division One series.
Really?
You know, I don't think they call it Serie A like they do in soccer.
The equivalent.
Same equivalent in basketball, which is one of the best leagues in the world. That and the Spanish First Division Basketball League.
Really?
Two of the best divisions, pro divisions in the country, in the world. Certainly within Europe, but within the world. If you're playing in those leagues and you're one of the lucky Americans to be on those teams, you're easily into six figures.
Really?
In fact, you're probably multiple six figures.
Low or high six figures?
Well, you're low, but, I mean, if you're like a...
Quarter million?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I would say probably between, starting out, you're between 1 and 200.
But if you're
a veteran there for a while and you actually mean something to the team and to the community, you've been signed to a personal services contract by the corporate sponsor of the team, and you're probably out doing promotional work for, say... I don't know, whatever, you know, Carlsberg beer, whoever's sponsoring the team. And so that's probably why you're out there making $200,000 or $300,000 a year.
Wow.
And you're basically saving all that money because they take care of all your living expenses.
That's incredible. I didn't realize
it's
how good they had
it. It's a sweet deal.
I didn't realize that.
Sweet. Sweet deal.
Yeah.
Young man who played at Providence. Mid-90s, Michael Brown
made a
career. You remember Michael Brown?
Yes.
He made a career in England, mostly. And maybe our UK Pats will even remember him. I don't know. But he played for like 8-9 years in England and did very well.
Yeah?
In basketball, obviously, it's like,
Yeah, right.
In England?
In England.
Huh?
And he did well?
And he did well.
Yeah.
So
wow.
Yeah, how about? And he's an assistant coach now at Marshall. So that's where he is now. All right, I digressed, but I had to digress once this hour.
We haven't had a chance. You're not going to have a chance in the next hour either.
No, because we'll be jam-packed in the next hour.
Well, so. I have to egress.
Okay.
And go back upstairs.
And to get to your empirical type.
I didn't really think it was that big of a word.
It's the word of the day. It just struck a chord. I got to go with it.
All right.
All right.
Great.
the empirical Eric Scalavino.
Empirical Scalavino.
The empirical Scalavino. Yeah. All right, we'll talk next week.
Yeah, enjoy your bye weekend.
Yep, enjoy the games.
Oh, wait, Kevin's frantically. Just speaking
Russell
to the
wants
microphone.
To say hi.
Oh, Russell wants to say
oh,
hi.
Oh, he's on the phone?
Oh,
I didn't realize
already.
He was on
oh, okay,
already.
Good.
Sure.
Hi, Russell.
Actually, I'm in the closet behind you, but I'm able to throw my voice.
Thank you very much.
I heard Eric was loitering, so I thought I'd pop on and say hello.
I always have a tough time leaving the show. You know, I have to do it because of, you know, my other responsibilities in the organization, but it's tough to break away. Radio's
fun. Why would you want to leave when you just get to talk about football?
Well, because I have to write about football.
Oh, okay.
You know, but
well, that's not the worst thing in the world.
It's
either.
Not the worst thing in the world, but
we're a distraction.
No, well, writing's a distraction.
Eric, while you're sitting, why don't you talk to yourself, and then you can accomplish two things at the same time?
Sure. And like all the young women that work around me won't think I'm crazy, right?
Hey, listen, it'll only last about 3 days before they come and get you.
I love it. All right, Biggie, we'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
We'll actually have a game to talk about next
week.
We
will. All right. Russell, take care, my friend.
All right, Eric, take care.
Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL Research Coordinator. Right on time, my friend. Right on time.
Yeah, now that we got the slapstick out of the way, we might as well.
Slapstick's all out of the way.
We'll get to the football, huh?
Yeah, you know, I got to admit, I'm looking forward to two games in particular this weekend, which we'll touch on all four of them here. We'll start in the AFC just because clearly that's where we're located here. The one game I think that would have a lot of intrigue, both games have a lot of intrigue, and I think no matter which three opponents could end up being in Foxborough in another week. We've talked about this already this week, that each of the three potential opponents sets up great storylines here in Foxborough, no question. But the one game that I think that really sort of gets people giddy is the Jets-Colts, because if the Jets somehow go on the road and win, then I think we're going to have a grand old time here with storyline after storyline, and some of it probably having to do with stinky feet and all that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying?
I certainly get you and so on, and it would be another... You know, a letter chapter in what has become the recent rivalry between them, and kind of you almost get the sense from Rex Ryan from the day he stepped foot in New York to take over the Jets is it's almost like likes playing the Patriots every 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Not only making him happy, he's kind of targeted the franchise, and I understand it to a point. There's that he's the new guy in town. And they're the perennial champion. The dynasty continues, as I have like to say. You know, not dead yet. And, you know, when you are top dog and, you know, a new bully comes in, the new bully wants to prove its worth. And
sure.
They haven't done that yet. They've gone 9-7 and 11-5. But they still haven't managed to win the division. So there's still things to prove there.
You know, first of all, I think it's we talked about this with John Clayton just a short while ago, whom I know you know very well. But, you know, the recent trend has been for the road team in wild card weekend to have more than just a 50-50 shot here. In fact, the road team has a slight edge, I believe, in the last several years.
Well, 6-6 the last 3 years.
6-6 the last three.
6-6 the last 3 years.
That's still a pretty good percentage.
Well, of course. Then of course, you go back to 2004 when it was a clean sweep for the home team.
Right.
So, but yeah, for the last couple of years, it has been the road team has more than held its own. You know, some of those road teams have capitalized on that ability to win that first game and use that momentum to carry them, especially in the AFC the last 2 years, the number six seed. Well, let me make sure the Jets were a 6 last year. The Jets were 5 last year. I stand corrected.
Okay.
But in any case, wild card team, mm-hmm. a 5 or a 6. Baltimore made it all the way to the AFC Championship game
mm-hmm.
In 2008, and of course the Jets made it all the way to the AFC Championship game, both of them winning 2 road playoff games into the instance. So a 6 and a 5. Remember a couple of years ago, 2008, the championship games hosted by Pittsburgh and Arizona, they both hosted 6 seats. Baltimore and Philadelphia were both 6s.
Yeah, I actually do. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, of course. And Arizona was a 4. So the 4 hosted the 6 and the 2 hosted the 6. And, of course, last year we had a 5 in it as well. So there's been a degree of success. I think in this day and age, and so when the teams are so close, sometimes you gain a little momentum late in the year. You go on, make a gangbuster move in terms of momentum, and sometimes the team that's been sitting around for 2 weeks catches itself a little flat-footed.
Sounds like it. Do you think that the which team do you think is going to be more flat-footed on game day, on Saturday?
Well, I mean, I have gone back and forth on this game like a windshield wiper.
Really?
Because the Colts have played very, very well the last 4 weeks when they had to. The Jets have not played so great, and I know Peyton Manning has had enormous success against the Rex Ryan's defenses and so on. As I was kidding today, 5-1 in the last six meetings with Rex Ryan's defenses is Peyton Manning, and the one is when Peyton Manning and/or the Colts took himself out of the game last year,
okay,
in Week 16, which was one of the reasons the Jets were able to make the playoffs. So I mean, he's had Rex's number, and Rex has alluded to it all week. You would almost think that he was playing Peyton Manning and the Jets were playing the Colts. So much talk about it this week. I think if you pin me to the wall, I'll take the Colts playing with more confidence now, running the football, stopping the run. And, when you come into the playoffs with your defense maybe doubting itself a little. And listen, the Jets were magnificent last year. They gave up the fewest points in the league. They gave up 8 touchdown passes all of last year. Not as many points, giving up 24 touchdown passes this year opposed to 8. I mean, that's just mind-boggling. And the thing that's interesting, I was having this discussion with a couple people in the last couple days, even though the Jets have more sacks than they do from a year ago, they don't seem to pressure the passer. They might sack the quarterback, but they don't pressure the passer like they were pressuring him last year.
That's interesting, because I was kind of thinking the same thing and didn't really know how to, describe that, but you're right. Yeah. When you say it that way, I think you're right. They don't seem to put the constant pressure or the sense of urgency, let's say, on the quarterback like they have in the past.
Yeah, I mean it's funny. Listen, football is not a statistical game. I've done a good job at making a living out of bringing up numbers and so on. But football is the consummate eye test. I mean, listen, the San Diego Chargers had the number one offense and the number one defense in terms of yards gained this year. Where are they? Mm-hmm. They're home counting those yards. Okay? So, there are a lot of numbers that help you reinforce things, but when you watch the Jets, do you see a fearsome pass rush from them? No, you don't. I think with them, and in classic 46-style types of defenses, as they slowly get figured out, you either get the sack or you give up the big play. And I think that's why they've gotten more sacks, but they've also given up more big plays.
Okay. Here's a number for you. Colts are 5-1 against Rex Ryan defenses.
Well, it's 5-1.
Yeah, that's what I said. 5-1.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's the number I was throwing out before.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, 5-1, and the one is where last year Peyton Manning took himself out of the game in the second half.
Right, and they
and
up
so
on. Lost.
So right, I mean, and to enhance it a little, 12 touchdown passes, 2 interceptions in those 6 games, sacked only 5 times.
Got you.
So, yeah. I mean, listen, the numbers speak for themselves. Now, but I also know this. At any one time, the Colts defense could turn into the Colts defense, too.
How much does last year's AFC title game have a bearing on this matchup? Does it at all?
I don't think it has a bearing. I think, it's going to be interesting for a couple of teams this weekend. The Saints, the Ravens, the Colts. They're all going to have to take... for the Ravens, who seem to put themselves in this position every year, not winning the division and having to be the 5th or the 6th seed and taking the long path. The Saints, who last year were the number one seed and now they're number 5. The Colts, who were number one seed and now they're the 3, which means they've got to play an extra game.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see how they gear themselves up, knowing that the path is going to take a little longer this year than it has a year ago. Or in the case of the Ravens, who find themselves on the road in the playoffs for the 6th time in 3 years. Remember in 08?
Mm-hmm.
At Miami,
mm-hmm.
At Tennessee, at Pittsburgh. Last year, at New England, at Indianapolis. This year, at Kansas City. And, yeah. Unless the Jets and them hook up in the AFC title game, they won't play a home playoff game again. I think that wears on you after a while, John.
Sure. Can you give us... a number sort of to read between the lines for this Jets-Colts game? Something maybe that we weren't aware of that maybe we should look out for on Saturday?
In terms of the Jets?
Yeah.
Well, I think one thing that stares out to me is I talked about the Jets, or I should say the Colts defense, turning into the Colts defense at one time and have that vulnerability to the run.
Right.
I don't know if the Jets can exploit it, though. I know they had a big rushing day from Joe McKnight last week against the Buffalo Bills, but to me, LaDainian Tomlinson has seemed to slow down every week. He doesn't look like the same spry guy that we saw back in September. And it's, you know what's very odd is he was supposed to be the support guy for Sean Green. And he wound up being more the guy than Sean Green, who was a little bit of a disappointment. And meanwhile, the guy who they got rid of that was the Sean Green support guy went out and helped make Kansas City the number one rushing team mm-hmm. in the league. And he outrushed Sean Green in Kansas City. And he was only 18 yards behind LaDainian Tomlinson in terms of yards. And I think of the four, including Jamal Charles, Thomas Jones was the guy who carried the ball more than any of those four. It sounds like it's being a little confusing. My point is that these Jets do not run the football like they did last year. And I think, you know, I know they have better receivers in the sense of Santonio Holmes and Braylon Edwards when they do catch the ball. But if I'm the Jets, I think they need to rediscover their tight end. Dustin Keller is a prominent part of their passing attack the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season, and he has seemingly disappeared in recent months.
Let's stay then with the other Saturday game before we go back to the AFC. Saints at the Seahawks. The Seahawks setting, obviously, the record that I'm sure the NFL wishes they hadn't set, but they do get into the playoffs as a division champion with a losing record. Even though they were 5-3 at home, does that have any bearing on whether or not they can beat the Saints on Saturday?
Well, the Saints beat them in New Orleans early this year, back in Week 11. Both quarterbacks had pretty good days in that game, including Hasselbeck and Drew Brees. Hasselbeck, by the way, will start the game this week. There was a little question about that. But the question here is, can Drew Brees, and I can't believe we're saying this, can Drew Brees hang on to the football?
Right.
Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints played turnover-free football their first two games of the season, John. They didn't play a turnover-free game the rest of the season. They committed 31 turnovers in their last 14 games. And of the 31 turnovers, Drew Brees had 24 of them. So we talk a lot about Brett Favre this year, and we talk about Eli Manning and so on in terms of big turnover numbers. Drew Brees went from 11 interceptions to 22 interceptions. Can we trace it to anything? Their running game, again, another team that's running game has disappeared. It had disappeared even before the season started, if you remember early on when their backs were healthy. Then their backs are not so healthy. In the last 2 days, they put in Chris Ivory and Pierre Thomas on injured reserve. That's a big problem for them. So this is going to have to be a Drew Brees show, I think. And maybe Reggie Bush, you never know. But it's going to have to be a Drew Brees show at Seattle. Now, the good news for New Orleans is Seattle's defense is not very good and very vulnerable to a Drew Brees show.
This is also, the third game in like 12 days for the Saints, right, here at the stretch. So, I mean, obviously this is you got to wonder when that's going to wear on them a little bit.
I get the feeling it catches up with them a week from now.
Yeah,
but I don't know if it catches them from this week. I mean, listen, you got a Seattle team that, frankly, you don't often say this. Some people say it, but you could probably really say it this time. Happy to be in the playoffs because they've done something that no team's ever done. They have a losing record and made the playoffs in a non-strike season. Okay, they're 7-9, so they got to be ecstatic to be there. Now, I'm not saying they're going to lay it up when they get there and so on, but I think New Orleans is a better team. I think Pete Carroll has done as good a job as he's going to do, but they've spent their whole year changing their roster, moves left and right, injuries in key spots. The Seahawks, and here's what one thing I do know about this game. It's not going to be close no matter who wins. Seattle won 5 games this year by 10 or more points of the 7 they won, and every one of their losses was by at least 15. So, you know, that's
yeah.
You know,
whichever way you're leaning, bet the points.
Well, here's what I'll say.
Lay the points.
Here's what I'll say. Pete Carroll was either running up the score or getting the score run up on him.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, I get the feeling he's been on the both ends of that.
Number I like in this game, Saints 0-3 all-time in road playoff games.
Well, yeah, and they, you know, it's funny, they haven't played in a lot of them.
Yep.
And so on, but you know, that certainly bears watching and so on. You know, for a long time this was a franchise that couldn't win a playoff game, and now they're the defending Super Bowl champs. So
right.
We shall see.
Who'd have thunk it? All right, let's flip over to Sunday then. We'll start with the late game first. We'll stay with the NFC, the Packers at the Eagles. I think a lot of people feel like this might be the most entertaining game of the entire weekend. In fact, the professor himself even said he thought that, you know, with the new overtime rules taking effect here for this playoff round, this was the game most likely to put those rules to the test.
Well, listen, it was back in week one that we saw the real return of Michael Vick, even though he played in the league last year. I think there was a run in that game, I think it was the third quarter, where he got around left end. And for people who weren't sure that he had his legs back, you certainly saw them. The other thing we saw about that game was also the emergence of Clay Matthews, who had 7 tackles, 3 sacks, and forced a fumble in that game, and basically changed the fortunes of the Philadelphia Eagles, because he was the one who, I believe, knocked out Kevin Cobb. Even though Cobb came back and started a few games and so on, the writing seemed like it was on the wall after that, and Vic took off and had a Pro Bowl year. So the one thing that stands out to me about this game, though, is the Packers' defense has played better and better each week. They've only given up 104 points in the last 9 games, and in 5 of those games they held the team to 7 points or less. I thought they were great last week against Chicago, put a lot of second-half pressure on Jay Cutler. But I'll tell you a number that really jumps out at me, John. No team in the league had more big pass plays, and when I say big pass plays, 30-plus yards. It's kind of a coach's gauge. 30-plus yard pass plays, the Packers led the league. 30-plus pass plays allowed, the most given up were by the Philadelphia Eagles.
Wow.
So then the Eagles like to dial up long themselves, especially early in the game. But I don't think anybody, as much as we enamored Michael Vick, and rightfully so, a lot of 38-31s and 31-26s and so on, the Eagles turned out having to have Michael Vick play spectacular football because their defense has really dipped down.
Mm-hmm. I got to think that, you know, especially because the Eagles are somewhat susceptible in the secondary right now against those Packer receivers who I've loved all year long. That, to me, is why I've kind of got the Packers as a slight favorite in this one.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm not going to be surprised. Like I said, I don't think I'd be surprised this goes to overtime. Not going to be surprised if the Eagles win it and so on. I'm just judging. You know, I put a lot of stock into defense, more so in the playoffs than any other time. And Green Bay's playing the better defense right now.
Right now, you'd have to agree with that, no question. All right, and that brings us then to Game 4, the other AFC game, and I believe personally the liable opponent for the Patriots in the divisional round, the Ravens. They get to play at the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, and this is interesting. You know, the Ravens, again, we alluded to earlier, they seem to be in this spot every year. They're the 6th road playoff game in the last 3 postseasons here. They won their last 4 games. They really lost the division on that Polamalu sack and the Steelers going into Baltimore and beating them. That was really kind of the end of winning the AFC North. 12-4 wild card team is a pretty strong wild card team.
Sure.
But the Ravens this year, to me, never really established their offensive identity. We know what the Chiefs are. They're the number one rushing team in the league. This is a team that's gotten better pass protection. Their quarterback, for the most part, has played lights out after a very slow start. They got a dynamic receiver in Dwayne Bowe. They look like a younger, more enthusiastic bunch than the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens are going to bring a lot of savvy to this, and the Chiefs are going to bring their share of playoff experience, more than people think. You know, a lot of their roster has been in playoff games. You know, guys like Mike Rabel on a Super Bowl team, Thomas Jones on a Super Bowl team. So, and a coaching staff that, you know, you can match up with just about anyone in the league. The Chiefs also found a way to pressure the passer this year, too. They went into this league with 32 sacks in their previous 32 games. That's a 2-year span. That's pretty poor. And this year came up with 39. I think Romeo Crennel has done great work with them. They laid a big egg last week against Oakland at home. I understand that. So, and they could have been, you know, as it turned out, they were going to be, you know, they could have maybe had a better seed. They could have been the 3 if they would have won the game. But they didn't, and now they find themselves in the 4. And the thing that even though a lot of these players haven't been around for this thing, you want to talk about a number, the Chiefs haven't won a playoff game since 1993. Okay? That's a long time.
It is
and
a
if
long
they
time,
lose
yeah.
this playoff game, they'll be the first team in history to lose seven straight playoff games. They've lost their last six. But I don't think it's going to happen. I like the Chiefs coaching staff.
You like the Chiefs?
I like the youth of the Chiefs, and I think youth pays off this week.
So then ultimately what you think is that the Chiefs are actually coming to let's see. If the Chiefs win and you have the Colts over the Jets?
Mm-hmm. The Colts would go to Pittsburgh and the Chiefs would go to
Chiefs would
New
come
England.
To New England. So you think the Chiefs will end
yes.
up here?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we'd have basically
the Packers would go to Atlanta,
yeah.
and New Orleans would go to Chicago.
Okay. Then in a potential New England West versus New England East matchup?
Yes, yeah. In fact, they should just move the game to the middle so they can play on a neutral site.
We're not giving up the home field, sorry.
I wouldn't think so.
We're not giving that up. How about, you know, in terms of these games, you know, I kind of look at them, and I seem to think that each one has the potential, maybe with the exception of Saints Seahawks. Each one has the potential, though, to get interesting, if not go right down to the wire, certainly, you know, be a fourth-quarter comeback before a team tries to distance themselves from the other. I mean, they seem to be good matchups.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like that's a byproduct of luck, or is that a byproduct of the NFL really making an effort to try to put more parity into this league?
I think teams, the good teams now know how to win late is what it is. I mean, the difference between 7-9 and 11-5 is stealing a few games late,
right?
And also holding on to win games. Okay, you think and getting a little lucky along the way. I mean, I'll just throw out Pittsburgh for an instance. You know, the goofy call down with Miami at the goal line with the Roethlisberger fumble, non-fumble, and they couldn't make up their mind on the call. They play overtime in Buffalo, and Stevie Johnson drops a game-winning touchdown pass. Those, if they're losses, the Steelers are 10-6.
Mm-hmm.
They're 12-4 winning division. They're a 2 seed. Okay, you know, they also made their luck in some of those instances too, the Polamalu sack and so on. You know, we seem to want to because the Patriots have been so dominant the last 7 or 8 games, as far as just, you know, lopsided scores and so on. We forget that they also find ways to win games. Like they found a way to win the Baltimore game earlier in the year. And in some ways found a way to win and hold off the Packers a couple of weeks ago. So it's winning those games that look like losses or potential losses are the difference between sitting home and moving on to the playoffs. And we've seen it year in and year out, especially recently. Any team can get to the Super Bowl. We've seen, think about it. In 07, we saw a 10-6 team beat an undefeated team and win the Super Bowl.
Right.
Okay. In 08, we saw a 9-7 team lead the Super Bowl with 2.5 minutes left.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what more evidence you need than that and so on. A lot of people didn't think the Saints would win the Super Bowl last year over in Indianapolis, and they did. So a lot of what we think doesn't necessarily come true. And sometimes we're going to fight it because we're so, you know, sturdy on tradition, but a lot of these traditional things. I mean, listen, 07, 05, no, you know, two teams, Giants in 07, Steelers in 05, win 3 road playoff games and win Super Bowls. Okay? It never happened before the Steelers did it in 05, and 2 years later the Giants did it.
Right.
So, I mean, it's the league in the playoffs has kind of taken on a little bit of an NCAA tournament feel to it.
Which certainly, I think, adds to the...
I don't think anybody's upset
no,
about that.
No,
certainly
no.
Not the teams who you're like, oh, okay, it's the Colts and the Patriots.
Yeah.
The Steelers and the Eagles. And
it
so
adds
on.
To the spice, no doubt.
Yeah, they're certainly hanging around, but they're not always winning it every year.
Here's one that would be a good one to wrap up on here. If not the Patriots, who do you think gets through?
Ooh, that's good, because I think a lot of people would automatically jump and say Pittsburgh, and I don't think it's necessarily a case. If it's not the Patriots, I think it's going to be the Jets.
Really?
Yeah.
So you think the Jets, even though you
well,
don't...
even though I'm picking the Colts to
yeah,
win...
Yeah, I was about to say, you think the
no,
Jets...
No, 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 even though I'm picking the Colts to win, and all the circumstances surrounding it, so but you're asking me a different question.
Right, right. I'm
you're
just saying,
different question.
Who is liable to, you know, if, let's say, the Patriots stumble along the way, I mean, you think the Jets are capable of, you know, cleaning the slate?
Yeah, I think they're capable of getting hot at the right time with the right thing. And who knows, maybe we went through all this for the last 5 months just to see the Saints repeat.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But
Good
yeah,
point.
If you want to throw out a dark, maybe you throw out a dark horse in both that people are. I'm going to say the Jets in the ASA and Chicago in the NFC.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Chicago.
Yeah, as far as dark horse teams.
Yeah, nobody's talking Chicago yet either. Yeah. That's a good
No. Atlanta's got the best record.
Right,
the
right.
The defending champions.
Right.
And nobody wants to play the Packers.
Right. And Chicago's getting left on the outside looking in.
Yeah. And that's probably fine with them, too.
We'll save that discussion for next week, then.
You got it, John.
Russell, thank you, sir. Enjoy the games this weekend.
You're welcome, sir.
You got it. All right, Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, joining us here in the Playbook. Let's sneak a timeout in, and then we're going to get Don Banks, who covers the NFL for Sports Illustrated and SI.com. Keep them coming, though. I still need your predictions for the AFC games, the wild card games in the AFC, and who you think will ultimately be the team to play the Patriots in Foxborough next week. Web radio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Facebook. Do it.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, how many Advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's got to be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn Advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian. You can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn Advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff may be. Learn more at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
You may know that Verizon Fios has more HD channels than cable, but what you may not know is that now you can sign up for Verizon Fios with no term contract required. And if you're not absolutely satisfied, you can cancel with no early termination fees. That's right, you can get Fios TV, internet, and phone at a guaranteed low price of just $89.99 a month for a year with no term contract required. And if you don't love it, you can cancel with no early termination fees. Just call 1-866-892-6057. That's 1-866-892-6057, and you'll know why now is the best time to switch to Fios. Get your game face on. Play the Gridiron Challenge at patriots.com/gridironchallenge and enter for your chance to win tickets and a chance to win the grand prize, an all-inclusive trip to the big game. Brought to you by Verizon. For official rules and terms, visit patriots.com/gridironchallenge. For new customers only, equipment charges, taxes, and fees, and other terms apply. Rate may increase after 1 year. Fios service is available in select areas. Offer expires 9/18/10. Call for more details.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats! What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed, go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Third down and two for the Patriots at the Miami 13. Direct snap to Brady. Looking, firing to the end zone. Touchdown, Rob Gronkowski. Touchdown pass number 35 on the season for Tom Brady. Touchdown reception number 10 on the season for the big, terrific rookie tight end, Rob Gronkowski.
Rob Gronkowski it is. I'm a little amazed he didn't make the Pro Bowl. I mean, I realize he's a rookie and all. He deserved it. Clearly has big playability. I think we've all seen it. Welcome back to the playbook. Don Banks, SI.com, coming up just shortly. Sean says this via email. He says, John, I have 2007 withdrawals. Tell me everything is going to be okay. The rookie wall worries me. It's going to be okay, Sean. I think it's going to be okay. Honestly, as Rich sends along just two words in his email, nice season. Yeah, it's been a very good season. There's no question about it. But I would tell you that season isn't over yet. It can be a nicer season. The fact that, and this was part of our topic of conversation yesterday, would the season be a disappointment to you if the Patriots didn't win the Super Bowl? And while it would be disappointing to lose the Super Bowl, the season overall really cannot be categorized as a disappointment because this team exceeded all of our expectations. Even in our wildest dreams, I don't think anybody thought this team would be a front runner for the Super Bowl. Heck, the Patriots weren't even considered a front runner for the AFC East. The flavor of the month was the Jets. A lot of people liked the Dolphins, including yours truly, before the season started. Patriots may have taken, that under their wing, so to speak, and used that to sort of nurture the year along. It's quite possible. I know the PFW guys took credit for a couple of wins in there along the way. It's because their stuff got posted up on the locker room wall, which is all good. So, no, it won't be a disappointment, but it'll be disappointing if it doesn't happen. There are two different things. I don't know that this, as Sean put it, he has 2007 withdrawals. I don't know that this is any sort of relation to 07. Different Patriots team, different makeup of team. This team, and again, we talked a little about this in yesterday's show, this team has more of the mental and even physical makeup that the 2001 team had. And we've made several comparisons to 2001 this year, even though this team is better than the one in 2001. There still have been some comparisons made because you've kind of gotten back to the way that this franchise's, recent decade of success was built. You've got street free agents. You got guys that weren't well thought of out of college or even in college for that matter that have played significant roles in the development. 21 free agents, undrafted free agents, on the roster, which is an extraordinary number when you consider there's only 53 roster spots. Now that's getting it done with, you hear all the great stories in the NFL past and the history books about the Miami Dolphins no-name defense. This is the New England Patriots no-name team. It just so happens, though, that one of the best quarterbacks of all time undoubtedly will end up being Tom Brady. One of the best coaches of all time will undoubtedly end up being Bill Belichick. And because you have Brady and Belichick at the front, and really not even in that order, everybody else just kind of fills in. It's going to be known as the Belichick-Brady era. But this franchise, make no mistake about it, this franchise and this team in 2010-11, this team has been built on the play of guys who are undervalued, not thought of a lot of, guys who have, when they've been brought into the fold, they have done their job of whatever it is that's asked of them. The Danny Woodheads. He sort of, to me, he exemplifies what this team means, what it has done on the field all year long. Ask him to do a job, and, he just goes in and does it. You just plug somebody in, and they perform. And it really hasn't happened like this. I mean, it's happened periodically, but it really hasn't happened like this to this particular frequency since 2001. Did you have something you wanted to tell me? Or are you going to write me a note instead? Okay. Not a worry. Very good. All right. Sports Illustrated, SI.com's Don Banks joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. Don, thanks for a little time today. It's greatly appreciated.
You bet, John.
Let's start it off with
the AFC wildcard games. And the Jets and Colts seem to be the one that a lot of Patriots fans are talking about. I think it's because a lot of Patriots fans would really love to see the Jets here again. What do you think the chances are overall in your estimation?
Well, I think it's going to be a great game. It's actually the one I'm covering this weekend, Saturday night in Indianapolis. And, you know, I think the playoff mode that the Colts have been in the last 4 weeks is going to serve them well. The Jets have been inconsistent ever since they got undressed in Gillette Stadium in early December, and they haven't brought their A game 2 games in a row since then. So I think actually the Colts have the momentum. I think the Colts are starting to get a little healthier, and these last 4 games they've had to win, they've won. They've developed a little bit of the same running game, stop-the-run mojo that worked for them in 2006. So I think it's going to be a close game. I picked it 24-20, but I go with the Colts. I think the Jets are going to have their hands full.
Yeah, I kind of do too. The other game, you know, I think most everybody feels like, you know, well, as much as we'd like to see the Jets here, the Ravens are probably the more likely team to come to New England because of their matchup with Kansas City. Did the Ravens, here's the question for you, did the Ravens get as favorable matchup, as favorable a matchup as everybody seems to think they got?
Well, I mean, for them, I thought they were the big winner in Week 17, and not because of what they did on the field, but because Oakland beat Kansas City, which meant that the Ravens got to avoid their nemesis.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to beat Peyton Manning, the Colts. I think it's 8 straight losses to him.
Right.
He's a little bit in their head at this point. That's pretty obvious. So, yeah, I think that's a great matchup for the Chiefs, or for the Ravens to get the Chiefs, a team that has to be, no matter what they say, a little bit lacking in confidence coming off of that 21-point loss at home, their first loss of the season at home against Oakland, dealing with the Charlie Weiss distraction. And, you know, they're a team that a couple times late in the year have been turned into totally a one-dimensional offense. We saw it the week Matt Cassel was out, obviously, and we saw it again with Matt Cassel in there. When they stopped the Chiefs' running game the other day, Cassel really couldn't do much. And I like Baltimore in that game. I think the Chiefs will probably look a little bit like a first-time playoff team.
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of what we're expecting, although the Chiefs certainly have a little youth on their side, and we're not sure, you know, what the Ravens, you know, I mean, they're certainly a veteran team, but are they a tired veteran team? I guess we'll find out on Sunday.
Yeah, the Ravens are an enigma to me because they're 12-4, and that should put you in a pretty good frame of mind. But they are about the least impressive 12-4 I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't put away a good team by more than 7 points all year, a team with a winning record. They beat Tampa Bay 17-10, but that's their kind of win. They just kind of slug it out. They win a lot of low-scoring, close games. It's almost as if the offensive I guess growth that we expected out of Baltimore these last 2 years seems to be regressing somewhat.
Don, you know as well as I do that media types root for stories. Everybody roots for
yep.
a good story. What's the story that you're rooting for to come out of this weekend to take us into the next week?
That's a good question. Well, I guess I'd like to see, you know, 4 close games, and maybe the Saints come out with some momentum. They're really banged up right now at running back, having
sure.
just lost Chris Ivory and Pierre Thomas to the IR. I think it'd be good if the Saints kind of got on a little bit of a roll in January and really truly challenged to defend their Super Bowl title. I guess it's been a while since we really had anybody put together a true Super Bowl defense, and I think that would be a good story. I don't think Seattle can stay on the field with them, but you know, putting it in Seattle where they get the crowd noise on their side, it could be closer than we expect.
Before we leave them out, what do you think of the Green Bay Philly game?
Well, it has the potential for being the best game of the weekend, but I like Green Bay in it. I was there week one when Green Bay handled them, and granted, Kevin Cobb started that game and Vic
right.
came in, and it was, you know, half a lifetime ago as far as the QB situation in Philly. But I think Green Bay, that's the team I picked in the preseason to represent the NFC. I think Green Bay might be coming together at the right time. They fought through just an absolute plague of injuries. They've earned their 10-6. It doesn't sound all that impressive, but I think it was a pretty respectable 10-6 given what they've dealt with. And I think Aaron Rodgers is playing better than any other NFC quarterback right now. So I think it could be the game of the weekend. But I expect Green Bay to kind of pick apart the Eagles secondary.
Don, since you're a Sports Illustrated employee, I guess I have you handy here. You know, can I make a complaint to the magazine department then for you're putting Vince Wilfork on the cover this week?
Yeah,
I'm just thankful that there's no game to be played.
I have to tell you, my wife, we used to live in the Boston area. My wife's a pretty big Pats fan, having grown up in Connecticut.
Nice.
She wasn't real thrilled with that one either. She let me hear it last night at dinner.
Did she?
Assured her that I have absolutely nothing to do with that, and I said, you know, they're not playing this week, so someone else will be on the cover by the time the divisional round rolls through. And she said, okay, that's the only answer that placated her.
I like it. Well, okay, that'll placate me for now. Let me ask you this though: as far as you know, the MVP race is concerned, we've had quite a bit of a debate over here. I mean, I realize the most Patriot fans are going to side with Tom Brady. We've had some others try to get in and sell us on other candidates, but because of what's happened in the latter part of the year, is there realistically another candidate for most valuable player than Tom Brady?
Yeah, I don't think it's a race. I thought it was pretty clear cut even with about a month ago in the season, and I think all it did was kind of widen. I'm one of the 50 voters for the Associated Press.
Okay.
I cast my ballot tomorrow, but I've already written who I'm going to vote for as far as the award winners, the individual award winners. And to me, I think there's a wide gap. I mean, I think you can make a case, as I did, for Vic as the offensive player of the year because he's been so spectacular at times. But I think there's nobody who's put up the production and gives the same level of value to their team as Brady. I mean, he kind of lifts a pretty low-profile supporting cast to some pretty remarkable heights, and I think it's going to be a wide, wide margin.
Can you share with us who you voted for Coach of the Year?
Yeah, I voted for the guy in the hoodie. I think he's actually done his best work this year. You know, for a team to kind of transform itself a month into the season on offense, to deal with as much youth as he has on defense, and to have that defense kind of come together and start really making the plays that count, even though they're not dominant. I think you could argue that this 14-2 is more impressive in some ways than 16-0, and every bit as impressive as that first 11-5 and 0-1.
Interesting. Final one for you, Don. If not the Patriots, who wins? Ultimately,
I guess I should say Green Bay. I picked Green Bay and New England the other day to come out of this 12-team field. I think in the AFC, the team I guess I would like the most would probably be Pittsburgh, but I can't get Pittsburgh past New England because I think the Steelers have the Patriots in their heads. So, and that game's going to be in Gillette if they meet, and I don't like their chances. But I guess if the Pats get upset, I think I would throw my vote behind the Steelers.
All right, very good. Don Banks, SI.com. Thank you for spending a little time with us. I know it's busy, but we do appreciate it, and we'll be reading what you write this next week.
All right, John. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. Thank you. Don Banks again, SI.com, and Sports Illustrated joining us here in the playbook. All right, all good, man. How about that one? He voted for Coach Hoodie.
Yeah, I was impressed that he actually told us.
I like it. Well, he did say, I think he wrote about it at some point, who his votes were for, but nevertheless, I'm glad he shared with us anyway in case you hadn't heard who it was going to be. All right, that's very good. I do like that. All right, excellent stuff. All right, so it's been an entertaining day. I have, however, still some time for you.
You have a pirate in the studio stealing from you.
Come on, man. What's up with that?
He comes back just for the food.
Well, you know what? It is your birthday. All right, please take the cookie. You can have the half-eaten one there, too, if you really want it.
That's just mean.
They really, come on, grouchy 38-year-old old man. Grumpy old man. That's more like it.
I'm going to go home and tell people to stay off my lawn.
Well, you've already got the pants thing hiked up over your belly. That part's good. I like that one. Yeah, okay. Now he's actually low riding today. Like it. Like it all. All right. You know what? Let's get to some of the emails and some of our stuff here. We don't really need to take a break, do we? No, we don't need to take a break.
Do emails. So
let's
do that.
Yeah, let's go. Webradio at patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline is open and available. 508-543-7482. Hit us up on the Facebook page. Friend John Rook, R-O-O-K-E, will accept the friend request if you are looking for us on Facebook. That's where we've got our Patriots Playbook Facebook page. It's actually my Facebook page. But put Patriots Playbook in the little note there if you haven't done it yet, and then you can join us here on the show during on Facebook. And it's a good way to get instant stuff out here. By the way, Derek from University of Arizona checks in. He says, Andrew Luck will return to Stanford. Wow. Tell Russell Baxter I said hello, and why don't you tweet me back ever? God. Derek.
I don't even know how to tweet at somebody. I just tweet. I don't know if you can tweet at
people. I just throw general tweets out there myself. I don't really tweet individuals.
I don't know much about it.
Yeah, I don't really either, to be honest with you. Okay. How many followers? I wonder how many followers Derek has. Derek, you got to put some followers onto me, brother. Come on, let's go. All right, we'll share here. We'll share. Jonathan says, all right, here we go. If you get the chance, please read this on the air. He starts every one of his notes by saying, John, if you get the chance, please read this on the air.
Polite, at least.
Yes, I can suppose he is. But then he throws me a curveball and gives me something that's, you know, soft pornographic later in the... All right, here you go. About the teams that will win my heart, truly, tells me the Jets will fight hard and win that game. Then my brain tells me the Ravens win in dominating fashion. I know we should not be scared of any team, but I want the easiest road to the big dance, and that would be facing the Jets. Really? See, I don't know that I look at it like that. I think it would be the most interesting road.
See, that's what I think. No, I think
you think it'd be the easiest?
I agree with him.
I don't think so. I really
think.
All right,
we can disagree. That's what makes good talk radio.
If you're looking for the easy road, I think the easy road
is the Chiefs.
Is the Chiefs? Not that it'll be easy, really, but
easiest.
I think the easiest road would be the Chiefs, and then after that, I'll be honest with you, I think the easiest road is to have Manning and the Colts here for the AFC Championship game, beating the Steelers. I think the Steelers are a more formidable opponent.
Yeah.
So if you're really looking for the easy way, you got the Chiefs and the Colts here. That's what I think.
Okay. I'm not looking two games ahead. I'm thinking of...
I know. Well, I mentioned this earlier.
My brain will explode.
I know. We mentioned this earlier. We try to actually do what they do down the hallway here. We look at this one game at a time.
But
this is playoff mode, people.
And just because of all the scenarios with having a full field still, my head will explode with all the different scenarios that could happen.
Yeah, there's a ton. We know... The only thing we know with any certainty is that one of three teams will be here Sunday, January 16, 4:30 Eastern time. That's all we know. Chiefs, Ravens, Jets. One of those three teams. All right, he says, one more thing. Seeing that we will have lots of defensive players coming back from injury, how much better will our team be?
And, knock on wood.
Yeah, knock on wood is right. And are we looking at the dawn of a new Patriots dynasty? Woo! Jonathan's really stepping out here. No, I don't think it's the dawn of a new dynasty. I think the Patriots would prefer you to say it's the continuation of the former one because they never really stopped winning. I mean, what's the definition of a dynasty? I mean, I know it probably varies from person to person, but a definition of a dynasty is winning on a consistent basis for an extended period of time. That's my definition. The Patriots have won eight divisional titles under Bill Belichick. That's pretty dynastic, wouldn't you say? I would say so. Ask the Dolphins, ask the Jets, ask the Bills how they feel about that. You know, while we know for a while there that the Bills had a pretty good run, you know, in the 90s, even though they lost four Super Bowls in a row, you could consider that Buffalo team somewhat dynastic, although they never won the big prize. I think, you know, you have to win the big prize to be considered a dynasty, which the Patriots have done three times. If they win this year four times, you know, in what, 11-year period since Belichick has been here, that's pretty dynastic. But I would just say strictly from the AFC East point of view, I don't think it's the dawn of a new dynasty. I think it's the continuation of the current one more than anything else. Let's see what else we got. Jay sent some stuff here. He says, with just 2 days to go before a meeting, Indianapolis in the AFC wildcard game, Jets coach Rex Ryan was busy praising Colts quarterback Peyton Manning and ended up zinging the Patriots. Yeah, I think I saw this quote, Jay. He says, nobody studies like Manning. I know Brady thinks he does and all that stuff. I think there's probably a little more help from Belichick with Brady than there is with Peyton Manning. Ooh. Wow. Thanks. Thank you, Rex. Thank you. That'll go up on the bulletin board here. If the Jets win this weekend, that's up front and center. I really don't think you want to piss off Tom Brady. I don't think that's a smart idea. Don't think it's a smart idea. Wow. All right, he sent something for Don Banks that I didn't get to, Jay. I'm sorry. It's a link about Don Banks. He says he has three Pats going in the first round of the draft redo. Okay, I'll have to take a look at that. Thank you for sending that, though. Awesome stuff. We got some people that do some good searching around the internet here. Absolutely fantastic. And sending the links along. I think I've got one more that I want to share here. Steve. Nobody stopped hating the Patriots. They always attacked the king of the hill. The dynasty hasn't ended. Yeah, I kind of tend to agree with that. I don't think this current dynasty. I mean, I would consider this dynasty ending when Brady and or Belichick retire. And who knows, they may end up going out together at some point. My guess would be Belichick ends up outlasting Brady, but you never know. It could happen. It could happen. They could go out together. They may realize that, you know, hey, I just don't want to do this anymore, or my chances to succeed, or, you know, whatever. You know, but I think that would probably stand to be more of a likelihood than Brady outlasting Bill Belichick, at least at this stage. Let's see what else we have here. Pardon my scrolling through all of this. I just want to make sure that we get the ones in here that we haven't read yet. A couple on New Year's resolutions earlier. Steve says, John, my New Year's resolution is to lose some weight as well. I'm 260, you're on. Really? Are we having a contest then, Steve? Who's going to lose the most? I only need to drop about 10 to 15. I'm in pretty good shape for an old fart like me. Michael says, John, my goal is to gain some weight. I'm short and light. See, now, I used to be like that. I used to be so skinny that I'd turn sideways and I'd disappear. I remember a photographer friend of mine, Al Panzera, who was an Emmy Award winning, a Pulitzer Award winning photographer for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram when I was in high school. And he used to kid me all the time about being skinny. And he goes, Rookie, you are so skinny. You turn sideways, you disappear. And that's the one thing that old Al told me one day that, you know, frankly, you know, I've never forgotten. And I wish that I could be that skinny again. It just doesn't happen. You know, metabolism and age and everything finally caught up with me. But part of what I'd like to do for New Year's. All right, I think I got a couple of other emails here I want to share. So bear with me. Let me get back to the page here. This one. Yep, here we go. Gene in Daytona. He says, Colts 31, Jets 24. Sanchez throws three interceptions. Ravens 10, Kansas City 17. Arenas returns kickoffs for the winner. So he has Kansas City winning, which means Kansas City then would come to New England. Seattle 21, Saints 20. Hasselbeck comes from behind in the last 2 minutes. And then Philly 31, Green Bay 28. Packer Akers kicks it 51-yard field goal with 5 seconds left. Boy, he's going out even picking the plays.
My ledge to stand on, and I said this at the end of the PFW show, is I think the Seahawks are going to win this weekend. That's my bold prediction.
Step out and do that? Seahawks yep. win?
I'm not afraid to step out. So I as they were making their picks at the end of the show, I stepped out of the shadows and was like, that's my – because they all took the Saints, and I think most, if not all of them, took the spread. They thought it was going to be a very comfortable win for New Orleans.
Right.
So it made me even look – bolder by doing it, but I really think the Seahawks are going to win this weekend.
Wow. I think the Saints will win, but I don't know that it'll be as comfortable as everybody says.
This is what makes good radio, people with different opinions, that's all.
By the way, he also says, Gene does, congrats to Rob Gronkowski, who made the all-rookie offensive team. And I hadn't seen that yet, so that's good. Congratulations indeed to Gronk. He's very deserving of that. Okay, here we go. Brian says, Rook, Jets will squeak one out against the Colts. Ravens will dominate the Chiefs. It is the perfect scenario for us. We get the Jets, and I'm not worried about that. The Ravens go to Pittsburgh, where the teams will fight each other like Mike Vick's dogs. We'll get to play a beat-up team in the championship regardless, or
irregardless, as they say in Rhode Island. Does the NFC even matter? When the Patriots get to the Super Bowl, the NFC will put up an also-ran. All right, Brian, thank you for that. Yeah, I think the NFC matters. Frankly, the one team that does concern me in the NFC happens to be the sixth seed, the Green Bay Packers. And that's because we saw Green Bay come in here and do a pretty good job of scheming against the Patriots' defense, at least to slow them down enough. We saw what Matt Flynn did on offense. You're wondering, hey, you know what? Aaron Rodgers could be that much better, couldn't he? On a neutral field, too? Realizing that Cowboy Stadium is, yes, going to be a neutral field. So, frankly, based on what I saw with Green Bay worries me the most, even though they're the sixth seed. And that is my prediction. Just like Don Banks said, that's my prediction. I'm predicting New England, Green Bay. I'm going to stick with it.
And my original prediction months ago was, I think we're just taking it for a given that a lot of us around here think the Patriots will end up in the Super Bowl. But my NFC prediction was the Eagles. Which doesn't look all that great, but it's one of those things. It's one of those things you got to stick with, though. You're sticking with your Packers.
Yeah,
I'm sticking with the Eagles.
I mean, why not? Why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I? I mean, they made the round. I mean, I blew it in the AFC. Hell, I had the San Diego Chargers. So, I wasn't even sure that the Patriots are going to make the playoffs, which is why, getting back to the original premise of the entire week, it's not a disappointment if they lose. I mean, the only thing that would be disappointing to me right now is if they actually lost here next week.
Yeah,
that would be a disappointment.
That would be pretty bad.
But the Patriots, I think, by all rights and reason, should be in the AFC Championship game. If they lost that, I still, losing the game would be disappointing, but I'm not disappointed in the season. Again, I'm trying to remember where this team came from and what we were all thinking about this team some 16, 17, 18 weeks ago.
Yeah, I'll echo that. I think if they lose in the AFC title game and it's a good, close, hard-fought game that they lose, I'll be satisfied.
And if they're losing to, say, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'll be satisfied with the season.
Yeah,
if they come out here and lay an egg like they did in the Baltimore game last year, I don't think you could.
No.
You can be satisfied.
No, I don't think you'd be satisfied. You'd just be saying more of the same, regardless of what, the season did. Now, the season was great. I'm going to maintain that I'm going to look at the big picture here and think that this has been a tremendous success because this team has done something that we didn't think it was capable of doing. That's all. All right, from this one, I'll share this final one here from Steven. Steven's from Fort Worth. Oh, way to go. So from profootballreference.com, is the 2001 Rams versus the 2010 Patriots offense. And he says it's a lot closer, the comparison, than I would have thought. The Rams in 01. This is the greatest show on turf Rams that the Patriots upset in the Super Bowl. They scored 503 points, had 37 passing touchdowns, 20 rushing touchdowns, 5 defensive touchdowns. 2010 Pats, 518 total points, 37 passing touchdowns, exactly the same. 19 rushing touchdowns, just one less than the Rams. 5 defensive touchdowns, just like the Rams. Patriots also added 3 special teams touchdowns, of which the Rams did not have one. How about that? Kicking points were also dead even. 127-127. And again, this is the greatest show on turf Rams of 01 that originally won the 99 Super Bowl with that, thriller over Tennessee. That's thank you, Stephen, for that. That's actually pretty interesting. Everybody considers that to be one of the greater offenses of modern time, and yet the 2010 Patriots are every bit as good statistically as the 01 Rams. And, of course, I think we all realize that the 07 Patriots, put offense into the stratosphere. And we're all now trying to make the comparison to the 07 Patriot team. But that makes me feel a lot better about the Patriots offense just looking at those numbers. All right, thanks to our guest today. What a dynamite opportunity. Good job out of you, Kev, for getting this together today. Thanks to Don Banks from Sports Illustrated and SI.com, John Clayton from ESPN.com, and of course, Russell Baxter from ESPN, the NFL Research Coordinator, who joined us every Thursday. We will be back, same patch time, same patch channel, next week as we preview the divisional playoff round of the AFC playoffs. Who will it be? Well, we're going to find out this weekend. Patriots versus somebody. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Tuesday through Thursday. Hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.